Okay, let me share my screen. So this is the Sprint Showcase for Sprint 121. Is my screen coming through?
It is.
Great, thanks, Sebastian. All right, so we'll go through each team's sprint results, starting with Team Ona. Excuse me, let's refresh to make sure this is accurate. So starting with Team Ona, Sprint 121, they got through three story points for 11 story points for three tickets. I know that they were working on DHIS2, measure report, and also focusing some on the upgrade, or at least utilizing the upgraded Happy Fire server. On to Team JSI. Team JSI was continuing to work on the kitting epic, as well as the reference data upload and some quick win tickets. And they got through four story points on two tickets. There's more points here than there were tickets, but I think a few of these are about to be finished. On to Mind the Gap. Team Mind the Gap was finishing the Rapid Pro implementation and implementing the subscription management in the user profile, and then also adding demo data for the notifications and the supply partners. They got through 15 story points spread across seven tickets. And lastly, Team Parrot. Team Parrot was working on performance improvements, specifically in the initiate requisition area, and a couple of functional tests, and their spirit animal was a reindeer. I would love to hear how you select these spirit animals. All right, you got through a whopping 47 story points across 1, 2, 3, 5, looks like about 13 tickets, but well done. All right, let's go take a look at Sonar. When I looked earlier today, it looked like everything was all right, but let's confirm that. So doing a quick scan through. I don't see any that are failing except for some of the branch that was here. Sebastian or anybody else, quite honestly, can we remove these things out of here? Because it is kind of confusing to see them in here.
Yeah, I was wondering about that too. I'm not sure if that's possible because Sonar just treats all of them as separate projects, no matter if it's branch or not a branch. But yeah, I can look into it a little bit and see if we can have a view that would just have the main projects.
Okay. I mean, if it's not simple, don't worry about it. It's not that big of a deal, but that's fine. Thanks. When I looked earlier, that was the only thing that looked like it was failing. And it looks to be the same case now. Okay. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen and I'm going to hand it over to Clay, I guess. Clay or Greg, either one of you.
Sure, I can dig it.
Great. Thanks, Clay.
All right. I have the full Ona team from Kenya here in the room with me. I'm going to share my screen now. Let me know when you can see it.
I can see it.
Great. This sprint, we focused on finishing up, sending the measure and measure report to Fire. There were some issues with the indicator queries that we wrote in the previous release, not returning some data, some issues with the row level filtering that we resolved. And then there was some work around the environment sync tooling and creating the gamma role that when we automatically start the environment. The ticket I was working on this sprint was just around updating the wiki structure, removing or rearranging our notes from the Gap project under this larger reporting and analytics page, and also updating the reporting and analytics page to reflect the current scope of the reporting stack we've built as a part of the 3.5 release and on. Previously, it referenced Druid and some of those things we were using about a year ago. So folks are free to take a look, give me any feedback you have on the wiki pages, but I've moved everything that was sort of relevant to this from the Gap pages here so that it'll persist beyond the Gap project. With that, I'll hand it over to Jeanette, to Winnie, who is going to talk about what she worked on this sprint.
So for this particular sprint, we're mostly looking firstly to automate the creation of the MySQL gamma rule on startup of the environment. That is done. So this was created within the specific backend by just extending the the createDB function. So now ideally when you start up Superset, the role will be created with the necessary permissions that were specified for the OLMIS gamma role. The second issue I worked on was generating the measure reports, which is almost done. So we have the measure reports being generated. At the moment, we have the measure reports for the 7 different measures. And with each, we're able to fetch and reference a location for these different measure reports. The pending work that we're looking into for that is how to include a reference for the measure ID for this, for the different measure reports. So, yeah.
Cool. Any questions on that before I pass it to Jeanette?
Okay, so the ticket that I worked on with Antoinette this week was updating the Fire server from version 3.40 to 3.70. And we were able to do this with the help of Lukasz and the team in Poland, which was very awesome. So we are now able to post locations, measures, and measure reports in the latest Fire version.
Okay, that's it from our end. Craig, do you want to speak about your work?
Yep, so I spent some time over the last 2 weeks working on the measure and measure report API endpoints that we need to expose in the reference data API, as well as documenting the rights and roles in that in the software requirement specification. So all that has now been added. We have 4 API endpoints that need to be built, one each for the measure, and they're all read-only endpoints. A measure with a specific ID, a measure report search, and then a measure report with a specific ID. So that's all been documented, as well as adding the 2 rights, view measures and view measure reports, adding a new role called reporting measure measure report access, and then updating the existing role that says reporting personnel. I'll post that information on Slack for those who are interested in reviewing those rights and roles.
Great, thanks, Craig. Is there anything else from Team Ona?
Nope.
All right. Were there any questions or comments?
Thank you to Lukasz for helping us troubleshoot the Fire server this sprint. Thank you.
All right. Were there any questions or comments? All right. Let's move on now to Team JSI. Lukasz is on the call.
Yes, I'm on the call. So excellent. Let me start by sharing my screen. Let me know if you see my screen.
I can see your screen.
Okay. So we are on the sprint 1-2-1, and our focus was to continue with the Kit Epic and for the reference data upload and some of the quick wins. So in this sprint, unfortunately, we get bogged down too much onto the kits. And then that also hampered the work of the reference data as well. So we have only the quick wins that were completed. And as you see, that there's 2 quick wins. And for the individual cases that we, Adunia, who is working on the front end for the kits, I think he's going to give an update from his side, because he can explain in more articulate way than I can about the issues that he was grappling with. And Elias will do the same thing for him. So let me turn it over to Adunia. Adunia, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Okay.
Do you want to share your screen or just talk?
I think I'm trying to share my screen to you.
Okay, so let me stop my sharing then.
Yeah.
Okay, you should be able to share your screen now.
Okay. So are you able to see my screen?
I am able to.
Okay, so in the current sprint, I continue working on the orderable kids unpack list definition, case number 6052. So it's currently on the review, and probably it will be finished by today. And I can show you that the changes are currently on the test server, so I can go there and demonstrate it. So one can go to the product list, and we can select a specific product to define the kit.
The backlist,
yeah. The backlist. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe the internet is a bit slow. It's loading.
So okay. While we wait for it, okay, it loaded. Go ahead.
So on the bottom of the screen, probably you can see the create kit unpack list pattern. So when one clicks that, a product model will come here. This means that we are trying to define the current selected product is a kit, and it have a constituent parts. So we can define the constituent parts by selecting a product from this model. So let's say the first two orderables are a constituents. So we can add it to the UI. So in this section, you can see the products are added. So you can even delete it from there. So we can put some number in here and we can save it. So the kit definition will be saved for the product. And if you go back, you will be able to see the data again. Okay.
So there was no issue on this part, right? Where you construct the kit, but it's on the unpacking of the kit in the stock management. That's where you face the issues. Are you there?
I'm guessing his internet is down, but I don't hear anything, and it looks like his screen is froze.
Adunia, are you there?
Hello, can you see my screen?
Yeah, so there's a bit of a pause in the audio from your side. So so maybe you can go back a couple of seconds and then start from there.
Yeah, so I have saved the kit definition for this product on the previous window. So when I save it, it goes back to the product list. And when I come back again, the data is persisted. And that was what I was trying to show you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's already persisted. I've clicked the view button and come here and the product is here. So we can add another product just like the previous one from this button. So the whole point of this ticket is about defining a kit constituent for the product. So this was the ticket for 6052. And for this work, I've been writing a functional test for that. And currently it's on progress. I haven't managed to finish it for this showcase. And the last one I picked for this sprint was creating the real unpacking process for the stock management. My responsibility here was creating the UI for that. And Elias have been working on the backing API. I think at this point the backing was not ready, so the UI is somehow I can show you somehow from my local machine. Okay. So from Zug management, we have the unpack link in here. So once we click the unpack, it goes to this screen. We will have the unpack keys button for each programs. So if I go there, the unpacking UI will come, which resembles like the adjustment for the receiver and the other UI. So I can add a product in here. So if I submit, it could validate at this point. But what's remaining is to wire with the API. So once the API is finished, this work will be finished and it will be ready to be pushed. So this was what I have for the current sprint. If you have any question, you can raise to me.
Yeah, just to add a bit more before we open it up for questions. So as you have seen that what Adunia did is he completed the UI portion for the unpacking there, but is dependent on Alias to finish up the APIs from the backend so that he can hardware the UI with the backend. So that's the part that, you know, he could not have finished until Alias, but Alias also has, you know, other issues that he's grappling with. So if there is any question for Adunia, let's entertain them first and then we'll move on to Alias.
So I had a question. Can you go back to the OpenLMIS?
Here?
The localhost one that you had.
Okay. All right.
So I'm not quite clear. I understand that exactly how this works. So you, from the stock management menu item, you go to the unpack screen page, whatever, and then you select the program, and then that kit dropdown in the upper right-hand corner, is that showing you kits that you currently have in stock or kits that you could add to your stock? And how does that work?
So this list is they are orderable, and they are also kits. So in our API, we can differentiate the orderables from the kits. So when the API is already finished, the orderables who have a kit constituents will be filled in here on the drop down. So one can select from here, and we can select also the load code from the second select.
So that's on. Is it just going to show you the kits that you currently have in stock?
I haven't heard you well. Can you repeat your question?
I'm asking, is it just going to show you the kit products that you currently have in stock?
Yeah.
Okay.
The kit that you have received from your supplying warehouse, and the orderable has a child to it, meaning that if an orderable has constituent products, then that orderable is the parent and the child indicates that this is a kit. So that's where we only display the kits that are in stock that still has not been unpacked.
But there's no place to just see what are the kits that I have in stock? Like how many do I have in stock?
Yeah, that would be in the existing feature that you have in the stock management, where you see the, you know, stock list and the physical inventory and so on, that or adjustment that you do in those screens, you'd be able to see them.
Right, but that would be, you'd see everything
there. Oh, in here?
Well, I'm saying in the screens where you can see what products you have, you see all products, not just the kits.
Yeah, at this point, it has not, the kind of backend has not been completed for the API to differentiate which orderable is the kit. So that's why what Adunia is kind of showing is all products for now.
Okay. And then the other question I had was the quantity that's showing up as, you know, having, I guess, not been entered in. What is it? Is that supposed to be the number of kits?
So say like I've received 10 kits, right? Of which I decided to unpack 5. So the stock on hand shows the 10 and the 5 that I'm deciding to unpack is the 5 that I enter in the quantity field.
Okay. All right. So that's the quantity of things that you're unpacking.
Right.
I see. All right. Thanks. I just didn't quite understand how it worked. Are there any other questions?
Okay, so we can move on to Elias then.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I stop sharing? Okay,
thank you. For this sprint, I only had a limited number of days that I was able to work on OpenLMIS, and I've started working on the backend API that allows the UI that Adunya just demonstrated to submit the unpacking transaction. And that the API should be able to accept that request and should be able to persist it just like the other stock events in OpenLMIS. That work is in progress. Most of my questions about the design decisions that need to be made are answered by Josh. Thank you, Josh, for being able to meet with me and also answer some of the questions that I had on Slack. Those are answered for me now, but it's not in a demonstrable state. I will be demonstrating that in the next sprint.
So like Elias, I didn't want it to put you on the spot to ask you this question publicly here. So for the 3.6, we have just one more sprint left. So are you comfortable that we'll be able to wrap up this feature by that next sprint?
The backend that should accept the unpacking should be ready in the next few days. So I think it would also give Adunya enough time to implement the wiring. I think we will be able to finish this.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for indulging this public question.
All right, thanks, Ashraf. Was there anything else? Can you hear me, Ashraf?
Yes. So that was a question for me. No, there's nothing else from our side. There was two quick win tickets that you have seen before. And then Hassan, I'm not sure whether he's in the call, so he could have given an update, but those things have already been tested and is in the done category. So other than that, I don't have anything else to add.
Okay, thanks, Ashraf. Were there any questions or comments for the JSI team? I know we kind of already asked. Okay, all right. Thank you very much, Ashraf and JSI team.
Thank you.
Let's move on now to Sam for Team Mind the Gap. I think you're still on mute, Sam.
Thanks. I forgot. Okay.
No problem.
So, for Team Mind the Gap, this sprint we worked on most of our notification work that we wanted to finish. So, the Rapid Pro implementation, and we still have in progress the subscription management that will be available in the user profile. But today we are going to be demonstrating the notifications work that was done for a ticket that we added about mid-sprint 3186, and then the Rapid Pro integration. And we also worked on some demo data updates and digest notification tickets. So, Chongsun, do you want to start showcasing?
Yeah, sure.
Stop.
Let me share my screen here. let me know when my screen comes up.
I see it.
Okay, so I have two tickets. One was the Rapid Pro, the SMS integration to the OpenLMIS notification service. And the other one was, I think, Angola feature request of setting up notifications for lots that are near expiry to send notification for that. So let me start with the SMS integration. So this is ticket 6040. Basically, we wanted to set up connecting to Texted Rapid Pro. We wanted to be kind of configurable through the ENV file, the settings file. So in our sample settings, we have two new settings that can be set. So one is sort of the sort of SMS API that we would send to send various SMS messages. So you can see that the sample is kind of set up to go to Texted's broadcast API. And then the other one is basically setting an API token, which for this showcase, I've already set up in our Texted account. Of course, this is just a sample file. So let me go to UAT. So I've set up this administrator to just kind of go to a phone number for sending SMS messages. And then how I'll kind of demo this is to kind of send a test notification to our notifications API. So the user ID here is actually for that administrator user that I just showed you. And so when I post this notification with this SMS part with the body, then it'll send, it'll essentially send this SMS message to text it. So let me just do that. Okay, so we got a 200 okay. And then we can go to text it to kind of verify that it has been sent. And so we see that, yeah, the message has been sent. And it actually did, so the, that SMS number, I can actually check, and it actually did send an actual text message. So test it again. And so we can see that the SMSs are being sent properly. Does anyone have any questions about that ticket? If not, I'll move on to the next one.
I just have one question.
Yeah.
Is it possible, so right now we are using Texted and Rapid Pro. So we are using Texted allows us to configure where things or how things get sent via the Texted service. Is that right? Or how does that work?
I believe Texted is sort of... So the actual like SMS service provider we're using is Twilio, but Texted, we have sort of set up a Texted account to have an integration with Twilio to actually send the real messages. But Texted is sort of like a wrapper that allows us to, I guess, do more flexible things with SMS stuff.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But basically, if we wanted to change the SMS provider, we don't actually have to change anything in our interface, like in our configuration. We just reconfigure Texted to use a different provider.
Okay. I see.
Yeah. And okay. I guess if we didn't want to use Texted, the Texted service, we could, you know, kind of set up a Rapid Pro server to to do that and then point our notification service to that Rapid Pro server.
Okay,
so if there are no other questions, I will go on to the next ticket, which is this notification of near expiry. So basically, we have lots in our in OpenLMIS, and those lots actually we can set expiry dates for them. And so, and of course, the lots are associated with certain stock cards, and those stock cards have certain stock card owners. So, what we wanted to do is basically, if there's a lot that is 6 months away from expiration, and those lots are associated with stock cards, we wanted to notify those stock card owners that these lots are going to expire in 6 months. So, and so we wanted to send an email on that for that. So, let me come back to UAT. And so basically I've set up administrator to my email. And so how we're going to do that is administrator has a certain stock card with a lot that that we would set to expire in 6 months. I think we have it here. Sorry. So I've what I'm doing is I'm updating this particular lot to so that the expiration date will be 6 months from today. So today is 3/27, March 27th, and so if I set this expiration date to September 27th and update that lot, I've actually set up UAT to check this every minute. And actually, let me come back to, so in our setting sample, there's actually this this cron expression of how often do you want to check lots for near expiry. The default we have in our sample is basically once a day, basically at midnight. I've updated UAT to check every minute. And so so hopefully it's going to send an email soon to my email. But so I did test it before, and so here's an example of the year expiry that would come. So basically, this product with this lot number at this program here will expire in 6 months. Here is the expiration date. Please log in to view the VIN card. And as we can see, the server just emailed me saying that this lot is expiring 6 months. So since this thing does it every minute, I'm going to actually change this to something else so it doesn't sending me emails. But yeah, this is configurable to however often you would want to check for near expiry. Something like once a day would make sense. But you can configure it to when you'd actually want to do it in the day. So are there any questions about this ticket, 3186?
This is Ashraf, just one question. So for the configuration for the repeat of that email, so in the scenario where, say, like I've received that earlier email that said that this lot is going to expire and I still haven't found the time to act on it, and the schedule was to send it daily. Does that mean that every day I will keep on getting that email?
No. So this actually only checks the exact day that's 6 months from today. So if you're only checking it once a day, it will only send you one notification, one email.
So just first time information, and then afterward the system knows that that email already went out, and they don't, and the system will not have to repeat that one again.
Well, it doesn't necessarily check that it already sent the email. What it checks is that it basically goes to the next day. So any lots that are expiring in less than 6 months, it's not actually going to notify you.
But then that does mean that if you set up that cron job to run more than one time in a day, you would get multiple emails?
Yes.
And if you set your cron job to be to check once a week, does that mean we can not get the message at all?
Yeah, so it wouldn't necessarily check. It only checks exactly 6 months from today.
So, you know, it probably, you know, something additional to consider is that if you maintain some kind of status that for this particular lot, the stock manager has already been informed about it, I don't have to keep on bothering that person, because otherwise it's going to be considered as a bothersome.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's definitely kind of a balance that had to be done here. Like, we could try to make it smarter, you know, say like, oh, has this person been notified? If not, then don't notify them again. Or, but basically, you know, we have to balance like being able to do something that's good enough versus like something that would be sort of more more robust, but would also require more work.
Yeah, probably more work in future, but you know, keep that in mind so that you know when it actually gets deployed and people have you know, thousands of lots, and then if they get bombarded with too many emails, then that itself is gonna blow up in, you know, everybody's face.
Yeah, I mean, it's unlikely that what has been implemented at this point would be sort of too much, since we would only notify once. It seems unlikely that anyone would actually configure that cron expression to be, you know, like several times in a day.
But do we have an idea for how many things might expire on a given day?
No, there wasn't really. I mean, there wasn't. I wasn't really informed of sort of what would be like a typical case, but this was sort of the requirements that I gathered from. From input from Angola, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I think I agree with Ashraf that there's possibly some ways that we can improve on this. I think for the basic implementation, this seems fine. I mean, the one area that maybe would have been, or maybe we could even make a small change just to a comment in the default DMV file, is just to highlight that if you were to set that cron job to run multiple times a day, or if you were to set it to run once a week, as Sebastian mentioned, it's possible you'd either get too many notifications or the notifications would get missed. It's almost like that value should have been the time of the day rather than letting people set it to anything other than that. You know?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we could have hard coded it more and just said, you know, just specify what time of day, or we just, you know, set it to something.
Yeah, but I understand it's finished already. So,
okay. If there are no other questions, that's everything for me to showcase.
Thanks, Changsun. Nikitam or Lukash, do either of you want to showcase what you've done?
Yeah, I don't think we have anything to showcase that would make any sense. So we'll probably just showcase the whole feature on the next showcase.
Okay. That's all for Mind the Gap then.
Okay. Are there any other comments on, I guess, the work that Changsheng was showcasing? All right. Thank you, Sam, and the Mind the Gap team. So hand it over to Sebastian for Team Barrett. I can see your screen.
Thank you, Wes. So as it was mentioned, Team Barrett was focused on improving the performance of initiating a requisition and adding more functional tests. And as you can see on the tickets marked as a sprint goal, we have managed to accomplish most of what we wanted to. There is only one ticket that is currently in review, and that's improving the requisition initiate screen such that it doesn't make an unnecessary additional call to retrieve a requisition representation after it has been initiated, because that representation is already returned when we initiate the requisition. So that's the only small part of the sprint that we didn't complete yet, but the code is done, it's in review, so it should be closed pretty soon. So Claudia and Paulina will be talking in details what has been done. I will briefly mention one ticket that I have been looking into, and that's also that was a ticket that was also mainly worked on during the previous sprint. And that's a problem with Jenkins clearing a workspace. And that problem was actually failing the builds to fail. It was mainly a problem with performance test jobs. And I have included a comment here about specific things that were changed as a part of this ticket. So most importantly, their performance build jobs were modified a little bit. So they now clear the workspace right after the build. And also they no longer leave the build artifacts in the workspace, but move them or save them as artifacts so that they can be retrieved even after a build is done. And other than that, there were also some smaller changes done. So I have modified the initialize scripts for the EC2 nodes, so they clear the workspace when they start up. I have removed the workspaces that were already present on all of the EC2 nodes and on the Jenkins server. And I have also updated Jenkins to latest long-term support version as a part of this. So we have been monitoring Jenkins jobs for like a week. And since we haven't seen any jobs failing due to a problem with Critics workspace, this was moved to done. So that's all I wanted to mention as a part of this ticket. Now I will hand it over to Ian, who has started contributing to OpenLMIS in Team Parrot. And so I will let Ian. Yes?
Can I ask a question about that ticket? Sure. I don't know if you noticed, but there was a bunch of errors on the build channel today. Is that related in any way to that?
No.
Okay.
And I think you're referring to the... Which exactly?
Well, those error messages right there related to the free space being wrong.
No, that's not related. But yeah, we still have quite some data stored on the Jenkins server. So maybe we will need to up the disk space there a little bit. But yeah, it's not directly related.
Okay,
and as I was saying, Ian will be contributing as a part of Team Parrot, and I will let him first introduce himself, just very quick, and then talk about his ticket.
Thank you, Sebastian. So my name is Ian Manyama. I'm working with VRG Reach. My station is in Tanzania. So I'm glad to be here. Actually, this sprint, I have three tickets. I was working on three tickets. Maybe I should share my screen. Can you see my screen?
Not yet.
Okay.
Okay.
So actually this sprint had three tickets. Had three tickets, one was to create a function test for total cost on requisition, emergency requisitions. This is already done. And the second one was, the other two was just small bugs. One for was to update the show flag on the when you update the reasons, it was not working. And now this one also is done. I can show you here. Let me show you when you go to reasons. Come on. So when you go to reasons and maybe you can choose the receipt when you want to add another reason here. For example, you can remove this facility planning, which is program facility planning, facility type health center. If I remove this one, which had the show status of false, it was not showing. If I choose it again, facility planning and health center, and let the show be true. If I add it, now we can see there is a show. There is another law here, which says show status being true. And when I update this, before it was not updating. We still see that column with show status false. Yeah, update it. Oh. Sorry. Send. Oh my. So I'm not seeing this. Okay. Sorry. Okay, when you go to receipt, you see that this is now is updating. It's one of the ticket. The other ticket was about facility type. When you try to add a requisition template, the facility type was not working correctly. So I can show you here when you go to administration and go to requisition template. And you try to add a new requisition template. So there was the issue when you add facility type here, it was not, for example, first it was accepting even if you don't choose a facility type. When you click add facility type, it was accepting and putting with a null facility type name. But now that is fixed. For example, you can try when you say test and say permit planning, and you try to add facility type, which it is invalid. When you choose it, you see it. And when you remove it, you see like it's moving. And we can even try to create. And when you come back the requisition template here, you see like you have another, for the family planning, you have another test facility. Another requisition template for the, on the family planning program. So that's this for my side. Now back to Sebastian.
Okay, thanks, Ian. Are there any questions to those three tickets? Okay, I'm hearing none, so Ian, can you please stop sharing?
Welcome, Ian. We're glad to have you as part of the development team.
Sorry.
So, Can you see my screen? Yes. I guess so. Okay, so this sprint I moved two tickets to TAM. The first one was proof of concept concerning caching supervisory nodes. So the main goal was to measure the time improvements when we are not retrieving resources from database at each call, but we are doing it just for the first call, and the second one is from cache. So the topic was discussed in details during two technical committee calls. So I will just remind some time improvements that I measured. So the first call to retrieve supervisory nodes takes about 4.5 seconds, and the second call from cache is only about 75 milliseconds. So I also implemented caching for a program to see how it works for less complex resources. And the first call takes about 14 milliseconds, and the second one from cache is about 5,500 microseconds. So that would be everything that I would showcase within this ticket. And the second one was to add a functional test for deleting skipped requisitions. So it's added, and we are checking here whether it's possible to delete a skipped requisition, and also whether it is not possible to delete a skipped requisition when there is already a new requisition initiated for a later period. So that would be everything from me. Does anyone have any questions? If not, then I will hand it over to Gdańsk.
Okay, so let me share my screen. Okay, so first ticket, which I moved to Dan, was about adding compressing to the HTTP post response. And I did it using some application property added. And also I disabled compressing in Nginx. Yeah. And I will quickly show you. Here are added properties. And also here we have disabled this previous compression, which does not allow post responses to be compressed. Yeah, and I will quickly show you on test server. That the post response is compressed. Previously, a response from initiate requisition was about 8 megabytes, and now. We see that content is compressed, and the response has 5 kilobytes. Okay. Next ticket is about adding a functional test for read-only requisitions, for approved and for released requisitions. And in this test, we are checking that we cannot add any product and we cannot see any action buttons, and we are not able to update any adjustments and things like that for both approved and released requisitions. And the last one was about making all performance tests green to be able to follow whether we didn't make any broken, we didn't push any broken stuff. And I comment out some tests and increase some times for in some tests to make them green. And we can, as we can see on Jenkins, currently it's all green. And I believe that's it. Do you have any questions? Okay, so I will stop sharing my screen.
Okay, so let me share my screen. Okay. In this sprint, I finally was able to close, finish ticket with fixing the performance of the supply lines endpoint. And basically, in the comments, you can see how much it's the times to retrieve all or page of supply lines improved. So basically, if you can see, you can follow the performance test. It takes now about from basically it took around 16 seconds, and now it takes less than half a second. Similarly, it goes for the getting the page of 10 supply lines. Also, this endpoint is used in the convert, getting the requisitions for converts. So basically, before it took around 5 seconds. 5 seconds, whereas the line 90 for the performance test, and now it takes about half a second after only changing the supply lines endpoint. So what I did mostly was simply adding the expand pattern to this endpoint, which means that we can now expand the response from the reference data server, which means that we can get for the supply line, we can also get the supervisor node, and with it also requisition group and the member facilities, which is something that we weren't doing before. And for the UI, in the previous release, we have to basically get the supply lines and the requisition groups separately. Now we can do it in one single request. So if you will go to the supply lines administration screen, you can see that we have single requests instead of two, and those two above are for the programs and facilities for the filter. So this also probably should be removed. because we are caching those resources. But previously we have also another request for the requisition groups, which is now omitted. And now you can see we have this expand pattern in the URL, which we are expanding the response for with the supervisor node requisition group and the member facilities, which are shown probably, which are shown in this drop-down, the popover with the facilities. So yeah, everything on the screen is working as it was before. Yeah, so this will be probably everything for me. Do you have any questions? If not, I will stop sharing and I would say this will be probably everything from the team part.
Yeah, so that's it from Team Parrot. Are there any questions to anything that was presented for our team? Okay, then it's off to your quest.
Great, thank you very much, Sebastian. And Team Parrot, that is incredible. It's kind of crazy to be able to see 10 times performance increases in some of the work that we're doing. So well done on that. I'm looking forward to see this get applied to some of the other areas of OpenLMIS. All right, I think that's it then for the showcases. Just want to highlight a couple of things. I want to reiterate the point that we need all the tickets to be properly set up in terms of having the release set and the correct labels, things like that. So please make sure that any tickets that you're working on are getting set up to be part of the 3.6 release. You know, as well as the fixed board version is correct. This becomes especially important here as we finish up the 3.6 release and we have that release page that I think Sam showed a couple of showcases ago. So it's very helpful for us to be able to show what was done in a release by using that page. So please make sure that all the tickets that you're working on are properly set up. And then just a reminder that the next sprint coming up, sprint 122, is our final development sprint before we start the 3.6 release process. So if there's anything that comes up that makes you worried about being able to deliver the features that we are expecting to have as part of the 3.6 release, please let myself or Josh or Rebecca or Sam or whomever on your team know so that we can try to make sure that this does not, that we don't have to delay anything because we really cannot delay anything anymore. So looking forward to one final good development sprint here before we do the 3.6 release. So thank you, everyone, and have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
So.